This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Election Day in Alabama. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Tuesday, December 12. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Off to the polls today for voters in Alabama, where Democrat Doug Jones and Republican Roy Moore are vying to replace Jeff Sessions.
A terror attack in New York City produces only a handful of injuries, but it's the latest in a series of attacks on soft targets.
There are fresh calls for Congress to investigate previous sexual misconduct allegations against President Trump. Hear how the White House is responding.
And the new survey that finds today's young Americans are more open to socialism.
What has been borne out by a lot of polling over several years now is that we don't know what these people are going to do when they get older, but we know that these younger folks, a lot of people call them millennials, are showing signs that they are increasingly open to embracing more European-style governments.
Wall Street Journal reporter Eli Stokels on millennials seeing socialism and capitalism in a new light. Alabama voters go to the polls today to choose a Senate candidate to replace Jeff Sessions, who gave up the seat to become Attorney General. On the final full day of campaigning yesterday, there were competing big-name endorsements. President Trump recorded a robocall supporting Republican Roy Moore.
When he came up about the definition of marriage, and I stood for marriage between a man and a woman, they suspended me.
Meanwhile, former President Obama made a robocall for Democrat Doug Jones, a former federal prosecutor.
We say no more to discriminating against those that are the least fortunate among us. It's just time, folks, that we say no more.
For Democrats, the race is a rare opportunity to win in the Deep South. For Republicans, a victory by Mr. Moore, a former judge, would preserve their narrow Senate majority but could prompt calls for an ethics investigation, since Mr. Moore has been accused of sexual misconduct with teen girls when he was in his 30s. He has denied the allegations. This from the category of things you never thought you'd hear. There is a U.S. Senate race in Alabama this week that is neck and neck. Here are six things to watch in this race from Paul Singer, Washington correspondent at USA Today. Paul, how do you see it?
Part of what we're looking for is where it's possible that a Democrat could actually win a statewide race in Alabama. I mean, you're looking for the white whale here, right? I mean, there's a baked-in advantage for the Republican candidate of something like a 60-30 registration advantage for Republicans over Democrats in the state. So what we're looking for is what would basically Doug Jones have to do to win this race against Roy Moore? We started with places like Huntsville. Huntsville, Alabama, up in the northern corner, it's a much less heavily Republican county than its surrounding area. It's, I think it went like 55% for Trump rather than, 70 or 80% for Trump for some of the other counties nearby. And that's an indication that that's the kind of place where Democrats have to get either a really strong turnout of their own supporters or, possibly, a depressed turnout amongst Republicans because of all of the upheaval around Roy Moore and the kind of skanky headlines.
Mm. What about, I know you focused too on suburban women. Do we have a feel for what they might do?
Well, again, it's sort of a piece of the Huntsville argument, same kind of theory, is that these are, the polls have been showing in the state that college-educated women particularly are the most offended by these allegations that Roy Moore might have been involved in essentially romantic pursuit of teenagers when he was in his 30s, including touching some of them improperly. That really has offended that group of voters. Now, the question is, and this is where you get to sort of the other interesting takeaways here, is, are they so offended that they're not going to vote for Roy Moore? Are they going to not vote at all? Are they going to vote for Doug Jones? Are they going to write in you know, Nick Saban or somebody else? That's the interesting question we have yet to, you know, that'll be watching.
Speaking of that, what is the potential of write-in votes and some sort of impact? Do we know?
Well, you know, there was argument a month or so ago that the Republicans were going to get a credible, qualified Republican on the ticket as to launch a meaningful write-in campaign. And one of the possibilities was that Luther Strange, the current U.S. Senator incumbent who lost the primary to Roy Moore, might actually be a qualified and quality write-in candidate. It never really happened. Strange didn't announce candidacy. There's a couple of guys who are write-ins, but they're registering at 1 or 2% in the polls. So it is conceivable that a write-in could have an impact here if a write-in candidate can take, or a bunch of write-in candidates can take, 5% of the vote. You know, if everyone protests and decides to write in someone other than Roy Moore, you know, Nick Saban or Richard Nixon, pick a name, that could depress Roy Moore's vote enough to help Doug Jones win. But, you know, again, now we're at the margins, and it's hard to see how any of those, there's not a significant candidate at this point that we're tracking.
Yeah. We're speaking with Paul Singer, Washington correspondent at USA Today, talking about the things to watch in the Alabama Senate race. How does this thing break down on by race?
Well, for Jones, the black vote is going to be critical. They make up about 25% of the electorate in general, and he needs them to make up 25% of this electorate and possibly even more. It's really interesting because President Obama has been making robocalls into the black areas of the state. There have been a lot of members of the Congressional Black Caucus traveling down there to really rally black voters. Part of the challenge, of course, is that there's a stretch across the middle of the state that is very Democratic. It's very heavily minority, but it's really, really, really rural, and there's not a lot of people. It's really a thin population. So that doesn't get you enough votes. You got to get every black voter in Birmingham and Montgomery to get out and vote for Doug Jones. And, you know, again, it's an off-year election. How excited are they going to be? It is a margin that he's got to really expand to win, and we just don't. We don't know whether people are going to get all excited for him to go to the polls.
Thanks, Paul. Paul Singer from USA Today. The White House is facing new calls for Congress to investigate allegations of sexual misconduct by President Trump and demands from some Democratic lawmakers, including New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, that he resign. The White House says any questions about Mr. Trump's behavior were answered by last year's election. During the campaign, more than a dozen women publicly alleged sexual misconduct by Mr. Trump. White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders was pressed yesterday about the administration's stance that Mr. Trump's accusers are lying.
He thinks it's a good thing that women are coming forward, but he also feels strongly that a mere allegation shouldn't determine the course. And in this case, the president has denied any of these allegations, as have eyewitnesses.
The renewed focus on Mr. Trump comes as Washington has been shaken by claims of mistreatment of women. On Capitol Hill, sexual misconduct allegations led to resignation announcements from three lawmakers last week, including Minnesota Senator Al Franken. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Tuesday. Another terrorist attack in New York City, although this one amounted to little more than an inconvenience for morning rush hour commuters. A 27-year-old Brooklyn man who's an immigrant from Bangladesh, inspired by ISIS propaganda online, set off a pipe bomb strapped to his body in one of the busiest transit hubs yesterday, but the explosive fizzled, burning him and injuring three others. Mayor Bill de Blasio.
This is the most resilient place on earth. We've proven it time and time again. We proved it just over a month ago. We proved it on 9/11. We're going to prove it again today. The terrorists will not win. We're going to keep being New Yorkers.
Akayed Ula, an electrical worker, detonated the low-tech device in a crowded passageway that connects Times Square with the Port Authority bus terminal. The attack came just weeks after a man drove a rented truck down a Manhattan bike lane, killing eight people and injuring 12. And a man was convicted this fall for planting homemade bombs in Manhattan's Chelsea neighborhood last year that injured dozens. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
We're facing voters after a bitter campaign. Alabama Republican Roy Moore cast himself as the victim of a national barrage of unjust allegations of sexual misconduct with teenagers. At a rally yesterday, he also railed about outside money coming into the state.
We're Alabama. We're Republican. And we're not going to stand by and let other people from out of state and money from California control this election.
Rival Doug Jones, hoping to become the state's first Democratic senator in two decades, declared the race was Alabama's referendum on who we are and what we're going to tell our daughters.
We've got to make sure that at this crossroads in Alabama's history, we take the right road.
President Trump made robocalls supporting Moore, while former President Obama recorded calls for Jones. The winds aren't yet changing for Southern California's wildfires. The fifth largest blaze in state history is threatening thousands of homes as it churns through coastal mountains amid persistently dangerous weather conditions. Red flag warnings for fire danger due to Santa Ana winds and a critical lack of moisture were extended into the week instead of expiring yesterday afternoon, as was initially forecast. Donald Trump sailed past a raft of allegations of sexual misconduct in last year's presidential election, but the national spotlight has now turned back to him. Several of his accusers are urging Congress to investigate his behavior, and a number of Democratic lawmakers have demanded his resignation. Samantha Holvey remembers Trump backstage at the Miss USA pageant in 2006.
So many of the women having the same stories, and, you know, him just being so braggadocious about this throughout the years, and for there to be audio and video of him saying these things.
White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders yesterday steadfastly dismissed accusations against the president. And the word of the year from Merriam-Webster, feminism. In 2017, lookups for feminism increased 70% over 2016. The lookups linked to the Women's March on Washington in January and the Me Too movement. Surreal was the word of the year last year.
I don't think I remember that from last year. Surreal. It came out of nowhere. Thanks, Jen. 23 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Well, for many people, it's increasingly difficult to buy gifts for their parents as they get older. But when your parents retire, there's a whole bunch of things they'll potentially need. Here are some gift ideas that can pay off from MarketWatch personal finance writer Alessandra Melito. Alessandra, where do we start?
Help around the home, a couple of ideas. There's downsizing your home, which is a huge deal, especially because sometimes people want to move, or if they don't want to necessarily go to a nursing home or something like that later on in their lives, they at least want to move to a smaller place, or they just want to get rid of a lot of clutter. Mm. So we went with the whole Marie Kondo idea of decluttering and downsizing, and there are services around that. So even if a family member doesn't want to offer their time or they get overwhelmed by all the stuff that their parents may have, they can at least find somebody, a professional, a moving professional, who will help the retiree get rid of some of their possessions or donate.
Very good.
And let's see, also just sprucing up the home as far as like finding somebody to paint a room or install things around the house that will help with accessibility later on in life, such as like grips in the bathroom or a ramp or something like that.
Got it. You mentioned technology, too. What can you do on that front?
So there are a few things. Tablets are a great gift, and it can also not only are tablets helpful, but having people to help retirees learn how to use these high-tech gadgets is really important, especially because it can help you stay in correspondence with your family members and friends. Unfortunately, sometimes people they don't fully embrace technology, so it's always important to get them up and running and make sure that they're also safe and secure with the way that they do use their technology.
Mm. So. Of course, that means you're going to get a phone call every now and then. Honey,
yep.
Yeah, honey, honey, where's the on button? We're speaking with Wall Street Journal personal finance writer Alessandra Melito. She's written a piece entitled What to Buy Recent Retirees to Transform Their Life. This is part of a series that they're doing this month right up until Christmas entitled Gifts That Pay Off. All right, so let's see. What else is staying healthy and happy you included here?
Yes, so this doesn't necessarily just mean going to the gym, although, of course, that is important, but even financially secure. So a few options that we had offered our readers were meal planning kits, which is more for the food side, which can help them make sure that they're eating nutritious meals, but also working with a financial advisor or even just getting set up on apps like Mint to budget and track spending, because retirement is usually a fixed income sort of lifestyle, and you don't want to go over or stress yourself out.
Thanks, Alessandra. That is MarketWatch personal finance writer Alessandra Melito. Reminder, by the way, that we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter with the username @ThisMorningShow. You can also follow me directly on Twitter with the username @GordonDeal. 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Hey, the holidays are here. Why not wow friends and family with a new type of gift, a package from Omaha Steaks? My wife loves the filet mignons. I'm a fan of the sausages. My kids prefer the burgers. You can't miss with the chicken and pork either. And that's just part of a special offer. For only $49.99, you can get the family gift pack when you go to omahasteaks.com and enter my code Gordon in the search bar. That's 75% off. Here's what you get in the family gift pack for less than $50. 2 filet mignons, 2 top sirloins, 2 boneless pork chops, 4 boneless chicken breasts, 4 kielbasa sausages, 4 burgers, 4 potatoes au gratin, 4 caramel apple tartlets, and an Omaha Steaks seasoning packet. Plus, for free right now, 4 additional kielbasa sausages. Go to omahasteaks.com, enter my code Gordon in the search bar for a 75% savings. Again, omahasteaks.com, enter my code Gordon in the search bar.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter @ThisMorningShow. Like us on Facebook or send us an email thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. On this Tuesday, December 12, Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. The Alabama Senate race is today. A pipe bomb fizzles during a terror attack in New York City. New calls for a sexual misconduct probe against President Trump. Pentagon will allow transgender people to enlist in the military starting in January. The Dow and S&P 500 close at record highs. First night of Hanukkah this evening. And a new survey finds there's something to the so-called man flu, when men seem to fall harder to illness than women. That story in about 15 minutes. Here's the summary of a new study of millennials and their political leanings. More government, please. Largely because of such millennials, generally those born in the 1980s and 1990s, socialism has moved from being a taboo subject because of its associations with the Cold War to something that has found rising appeal among those polled by Harvard and in other surveys that compare different generations. It's a story from Wall Street Journal White House reporter Eli Stokols. Eli, what do we have?
Well, there's always this perception that young people are more liberal, progressive, and get more conservative as they get older. What has been borne out by a lot of polling over several years now is that we don't know what these people are going to do when they get older, but we know that these younger folks, a lot of people call them millennials, are showing signs that they are increasingly open to embracing more European-style governments. Last year, 42% of younger Americans polled by Harvard University, which has polled millennials for 16 years now, 42% said they support capitalism. Only 19% identified themselves as capitalists. And you have to put this in the historical context. This is a generation that is coming of age, looking for jobs, graduating college, just years after this financial crisis. In this period of slow economic growth, they are people who are trying to find jobs, thinking about buying homes, starting families, probably not going to have a ton of money in the stock market, so the shooting Dow going up, that's not something that is really tangible to them. And they also grew up post-Cold War, most of them coming of age after the Reagan presidency, after the demise of the Soviet Union. And so they did not grow up as people in the 60s, 70s, and 80s did, sort of hearing about how socialism is bad. So this helps explain perhaps the rise of Bernie Sanders, the success of Bernie Sanders' campaign last year as a open, self-referential democratic socialist.
Did we see any sharp changes in the poll?
It was sort of held steady for a long time, and then the last 2 years really plunged the number of young people who believe that tax cuts will create economic growth. Just a lot more skepticism in recent years about supply-side economics. Perhaps that's the result of voices like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders gaining resonance. Perhaps it's a combination of that and the factors and the day-to-day experiences of these people in the workforce.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal White House reporter Eli Stokols. His piece is called Socialism and Capitalism Seen in New Light by Younger Americans. You hinted at it in one of your remarks there, but I'm going to read a line from this story that really jumped out at me. Millennials want a bigger role for government in making conditions better for their future. I mean, do they think the current government runs well? I guess the cynic in me would ask.
Well, they are skeptical. I mean, this is nuanced, right? Because they are very skeptical of institutions. The Iraq War, and a lot of their growing up was something that made them skeptical that the government, the military, will always do the right thing. The financial crisis. A lot of things that make them skeptical about government, but when a lot of the polling and the things that we looked at, there are these questions that these young people get asked, and more and more we're seeing them say yes when asked, is it worth combating climate change, even if it, impedes economic growth, or there's an economic cost. More people are saying yes. Fewer people are saying that tax cuts will spark economic growth, as I mentioned. Yeah. More people are just open to government doing more things to help low and middle income families in terms of a social safety net.
You said the sea change is underway and it will continue to develop, I guess. Anybody see the millennials kind of putting up their own a presidential candidate, for example?
Well, so John Delavolpe, who's the pollster who's conducted the Harvard survey for 16 years now, really does believe that 2018 and perhaps 2020 are sort of the last chance for the traditional Democratic and Republican parties to make real inroads with these voters. When you talk to young voters, they're not really enamored of either party. I think it looks better for Democrats at the moment, but they have to do a better job. Hillary Clinton did not really appeal to these young people the way Bernie Sanders did. Yeah. And perhaps it was Bernie's ideas, but a lot of young people said it was also his authenticity, right? He's older than Hillary Clinton. It's not his age. He's not of this generation, but he was more in sync with the younger voters.
It's Wall Street Journal reporter Eli Stokols. It's 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us, and welcome into Tuesday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, if you happen to catch some of the Colts-Bills game on Sunday, it was made 100 times more interesting because of a blizzard during the game in Buffalo, making passing and kicking the ball nearly impossible. And word now that Mother Nature might have cost one Colts player $500,000. According to USA Today, kicker Adam Vinatieri, still going strong at the age of 44, was on his way to receiving a bonus of $500,000 for making at least 90% of his field goals this season. He was at 95.7% before Sunday's game, before the blizzard contributed to him missing his only two field goal attempts. So now, in order to get back to the 90% mark, Vinatieri will have to make at least five field goals without a miss. He's currently averaging two field goal attempts per game, so odds are he should get a chance to get back up to 90% by season's end, with two of the three remaining Colts games being played indoors in Indianapolis.
Yeah, what he needs now is to rework that contract to say if there's a foot of snow on the ground, those field goals don't count.
There should be some sort of provision in there for impossible-to-kick conditions, right?
Because now what happens? Now Adam has to cheer for the offense to stall in the red zone.
Yeah.
So we can get like a little 30-yard chippy indoors.
Another factor too, he's 44 years old. As someone who's near his age, I know that every single year the cold makes me feel worse than it did the year before. So as you get older, the cold affects you more, so I'm sure it affected him even more than it would have like a 23 year old kicker.
By the way, the highlights of that game, toward the end when that snow had mounted, what surprised me was that I know the games have to get played, but what about fan safety?
Oh yeah,
for those who had to drive there and drive home in those conditions.
Yeah,
it's incredible. It was 6 inches of snow on the ground.
Not to mention hypothermia. Who knows?
Yeah.
And good news, Gordon, for one little girl who had Christmas saved for her after surgeons were able to save her elf on the shelf following a rough encounter with the family dog. According to NBC, 7-year-old Aubrey Thelen was distraught last week after she discovered her dog Zoe had attacked her family's elf, whom they named Sam. The German Shepherd ripped off Sam's right arm and left a hole in his rosy red cheek. Luckily, Aubrey's mom is the nurse manager for the emergency department at an Orlando Children's Hospital. After wheeling the elf in on a gurney and assessing his injuries, an emergency room staffer got to work. As any kid with an elf on the shelf knows, no human can touch Santa's little spy or he will lose his magic. That's why the nurse made sure to wear Santa's special magic gloves while sewing Sam back together. And good news, Sam is on the mend and back on the shelf, having surely learned a lesson to find a landing spot well out of Zoe the dog's reach. Mm. And a lesson for all of his other elf friends as well.
Yeah.
Up high, right, away from the dog. German right. Shepherd, I'm sure, has got a pretty good reach, so you got to be way up there.
We did have an unfortunate incident in the Deal House.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I remember hearing about this at the time.
Where Kendall, who was, she was, I don't know, maybe six or something at the time, touched the elf.
Oh, boy.
With ungloved hands. Yes, meltdown proceeded to follow, and we had convinced her that it was merely accidental touching, and therefore the elf does not lose his powers in those situations,
and good news
only
for her.
Unless the touching is deliberate.
And good news, I'm sure she got her gifts that
fortunately,
Christmas.
Fortunately, Santa came. Yes, things worked out. Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and defense. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit michiganbusiness.com.
Give your employees the power to do their best work and maximize this year's budget when you update to new, powerfully performing Dell Business PCs with Intel Core processors. Dell's dedicated small business advisors mean you'll always get the best deal on the right solution for your business. Get up to $300 off select business PCs and servers now till December 17th. Did I mention there's free shipping? Visit Dell.com/small business or call 877-BUY-DELL. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
Thanks for spending time with us. This is a story that may cause severe, sarcastic laughing from women. A new study finds that when a man complains of cold or flu symptoms, it may not be fair to dismiss his laments as simply a case of man flu. LiveScience.com says men may really experience worse symptoms than women after catching a respiratory virus. The review was published yesterday in a special Christmas issue of the medical journal The BMJ. Man flu refers to the idea that men may exaggerate the symptoms of a minor illness, such as a cold. Dr. Kyle Sue, clinical assistant professor at Memorial University of Newfoundland in Canada, found evidence that men may have a weaker immune response to the viruses that cause flu or the common cold, and as a result, men may have greater risk for serious symptoms, even death. Other studies from Hong Kong and the U.S. have found that men have a higher risk for hospital admission and death from the flu also. More research is needed, largely because women feel this study is a load of garbage. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, a would-be suicide bomber's rush hour blast in the heart of the New York City subway system failed to cause the bloodshed he intended, but it gave new fuel to President Trump's push to limit immigration. Hours after the explosion in an underground passageway connecting two of Manhattan's busiest stations, Trump cited the background of the bomber in renewing his call for closer scrutiny of foreigners who come to the U.S., White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders.
The president's policy has called for an end to chain migration, and if that had been in place, that would have prevented this individual from coming to the United States.
The man arrested in the bombing told investigators he wanted to retaliate for U.S. action against ISIS. Transgender recruits will be allowed to enlist in the military beginning January 1st as President Trump's ordered ban suffers more legal setbacks. The new policy reflects the difficult hurdles the federal government would have to cross to enforce Trump's demand earlier this year to bar transgender transgender individuals from the military. Three federal courts have ruled against the ban, including one yesterday in Washington state. The Trump administration asserts that the Republican tax plan will deliver a swift adrenaline shot to the economy that will send hundreds of billions pouring into federal tax coffers, but nonpartisan analyses make a less rosy projection of new revenue. President Trump will try tomorrow to sell the American people on a GOP tax overhaul that polls show is unpopular with many. Celebrity chef and TV host Mario Batali has stepped down from the day-to-day operations of his restaurant management company after sexual misconduct allegations. Multiple women say Batali had touched them inappropriately and that he was reprimanded for inappropriate behavior in the workplace as recently as 2 months ago. Batali says much of the behavior described does, in fact, match up with ways he has acted. He added that the behavior was wrong and there are no excuses. A six-year-old is taking over YouTube and making millions. Forbes says Ryan of Ryan Toys Review generated $11 million from YouTube ad revenue by reviewing toys and food on his channel. The YouTuber has amassed over 10 million subscribers, and his dozens of videos, which feature him playing games with his family and being surprised with toys, have been viewed more than 16 billion times.
What?
What? I gotta look this up. I have not seen this kid.
He's six.
Yeah.
Who has a YouTube channel at six?
Who makes $11 million on YouTube?
Earning $11 million.
Wow. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. Thanks for being with us. As frightened pedestrians ran from an explosion near the Port Authority bus terminal yesterday, 28-year-old Port Authority officer Anthony Manfredini ran toward the area where the device detonated. Agency and union officials tell the Wall Street Journal that Mr. Manfredini, a former canine bomb technician in the Marines, was the first of four Port Authority officers who apprehended the terror suspect. Mr. Manfredini took the device off the man. He then alerted the Port Authority police desk and three more officers, Jack Collins, Sean Gallagher, and Drew Preston. They were sent to the scene. The officers saw the suspect surrounded by smoke, and the head of the union said they jumped on the man so he couldn't detonate any other potential devices. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.